It is Locked On Jazz for the 13th of August. What would be the thing that derails any of the Western Conference teams? Plus, the summer interview series with Tony Jones. We start on Donovan Mitchell, and then we get into team chemistry. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making your offseason as a Jazz fan even better than you could imagine on a year in which it's all coming. So the schedule is out. Tony Jones will join us. I did a whole show on the schedule yesterday. It's interesting. My dad called me with all sorts of reasons last night why the schedule was bad. And he usually nails it. He sees things that I don't see. He had us with some tough road games and popping in and out of town and some things. He nailed it last year. We had all those single road games as being a real issue. So we'll dig into that a tiny bit. I want to talk about, I'm trying to, you know, analyze and figure out what might go wrong. For anyone, I'll dig into that. And then Tony Jones will join us. Here's how the Tony Jones interview is going to work. We did segment one on Sunday, and then he was driving back from San Diego with the family, and it just was going to become a problem, and it didn't sound great, and we broke it up twice in 7 minutes. So we just put it on ice and then did the rest of it yesterday. So the first segment is about 7-8 minutes. It's all about Donovan. It cuts off, and then he rejoins us for a longer segment talking about the locker room, how this team's going to come together, whose team it is, and things of that nature. Then Wednesday's show, we actually get into the whole Russell Westbrook situation, how it impacted the offseason, and then moved Thursday into kind of the West and teams and how good the Jazz are and some of that. We didn't actually get into the end of the Derek Favors era as much as I wanted. To Tony's credit, there's just a lot to talk to him about. So the schedule's out. I mean, we open up with this killer stretch where we play 7 games against the top probably NBA finalist teams. We play the Lakers, the Clippers twice, Milwaukee, Philadelphia in our first 8 games. We have another killer stretch in February in which we play Denver twice, Portland twice, and Houston twice with the Spurs sandwiched in there in 7-game stretch. Otherwise, we have a kind of extended stretch through November on the road for 5 games. And our only other road trip is a 4-gamer, Cleveland, New York, Boston, Detroit. And you know what, frankly, back-to-backs on the end of one of those trips, I frankly, maybe the players disagree, but I'd rather get home at that point. And none of those are particularly long travel. Milwaukee, Indiana, down to Memphis, back up to Toronto doesn't make a lot of sense on that one. And there's one other where, like, if you just isolate the Jazz, it doesn't make sense. We're in San Antonio, home against San Antonio, then back at Dallas. Okay, why don't we flip those 2 games and then have it that way? Tony will have some thoughts on the schedule coming up as well. I've been trying to figure out if there's a scenario where any of these teams turns out to be in the West not as good as we think. And I think there's 2 scenarios where that could take place. And they involve Houston and they involve the Lakers. And that is, what happens if they're bad defensively? If you look over the last 3 years of the NBA, and I'll stretch this out more and probably do 5 years by the time I'm done with this research. If you are a bad defensive team, so bottom 10 defensive team in the NBA, you don't win very much. Excuse me. I'm going to sneeze. So there are only 2 teams in the last 3 years that have won 50 games out of those 30 teams. They were the LeBron's teams. Eastern Conference, 29th defensively 1 year, won 50 games. 21st defensively, won 51 games. They were the 3rd and 5th ranked offensive teams. But that seems to be, and those are bad, those are bottom 5 defensive teams. But that seems to be kind of the limit. If you're a bad defensive team, bottom 5, bottom 6 defensive team, you're not winning any more than 50. And fact is, even some of the teams that weren't that bad, you have to be great offensively. Only seven teams have had a winning record. Houston and LA are going to have winning records. But are they going to win 55? What would prohibit them from winning 55 in my book is the idea that they become below bottom 10 defensive teams in the league. And if you become a bottom 10 defensive team in the league, Nuggets were 29th a few years ago. They're the fourth best offense. They only won 40 games. Timberwolves were 27th a few years ago. They're the fourth best offense. They won 47 games. Clippers were 21st. They were the ninth best offense. They won 48 games. These are all very real. Nuggets were 26th. They were the 25th defensively, the sixth best offense. They won 46 games. I think there's a chance that either the Lakers or Rockets don't defend at all. Now, are they worse than Cleveland and Phoenix and New York and Atlanta and Washington? Probably not. Minnesota? Probably not. Charlotte? Probably not. Those are probably the worst defensive teams we'll see this year in the NBA. New Orleans will be interesting to see if they can defend, as young and they are. And for whatever reason, New Orleans has never been particularly good defensively, even with Anthony Davis. But as you project and look at this season, you know, the other contenders, I'm pretty sure Clippers are going to be good defensively. Utah's going to be good defensively. Denver was 11th in the league last year defensively. I'm just going to tip my hat to them and say they've made the stride to become a good defensive team. But I also think there's some areas where Denver, to me, has some abnormalities in their season last year that leads me to believe that their 54 wins comes back to 51. Still very, very good, but that their 54 wins comes back to 51. Their differential wasn't quite as good as they played. They got a lot of fortunate breaks. There's some things to it. But the question is, will either Houston or the Lakers be terrible defensively? And to me, that would be where you find something wrong. Now, the Lakers have Anthony Davis, and under Luke Walton, they were actually pretty good defensively. They were 14th each of the last years, and Frank Vogel has traditionally been good defensively. But does LeBron have that defensive energy still in him? And Anthony Davis's teams have never been great defensively. And Houston was 17th last year after being terrible for early in the year, after being 6th defensively the year before, 16th the year before that, and in the 20s the year before that. Without Jeff Podzilic, now as their assistant coach, that's where that question lies a little bit for me, is whether or not in some way they have changed who they are defensively. One, Harden and Westbrook are not noticed defensive players despite Westbrook's energy. And secondarily, they don't have Jeff Podzilic. They've changed up that coaching staff, and Mike D'Antoni is just not a big defensive guy. Tony Jones joins us here in just a second. Fantasy football players, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and Locked On Fantasy Football. Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering fantasy football. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else. Then you're the same. So get the edge with Vinny. He'll put you ahead on draft day. He'll put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football for your from your favorite podcast provider. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. A lot of great things going on at Murdoch Chevy right now. The Silverado Crew Cab 2019, it for 72 months, 0% APR. And the Equinox, which I drove most recently from Chevy, 219 per month lease on a 2019. 219 per month. All offers are good through the month of August. But more importantly, it's the 93rd anniversary for Murdoch Chevy and their connection to Utah, selling Chevys in Utah for 93 years. Every vehicle to celebrate that comes with lifetime oil changes. It's the no regrets policy that the Murdochs have, that they've made them part of Utah. Part of Utah's culture selling cars is that they want to make sure you have a fabulous experience and you leave with absolutely no regrets. Murdoch Chevy, the great lineup from the new Blazer. I'm hoping to drive it soon. The Equinox, the Silverado, Colorado trucks, the Tahoe and the Suburban. You know Chevy. It's part of a Americana and the Murdochs have been with you for 93 years in Utah. Stop by Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross, also located in Logan. As I said, this is part one with Tony Jones, who kind of awkwardly cuts off. So just kind of understand that, and then we'll come back with part two. Here is Tony Jones. The much-anticipated summer interview series with Tony Jones of The Athletic. People seem to like it when we get together. I think they think we're going to end up like on a podcast brawl. It doesn't happen that often. We got an extended period here this week, though, where there's always a possibility for some moment where TJ and Locke go. We all know who would win that battle, but we don't want to see if it's, we'll see if it happens. Tony Jones, how are you?
I'm good. You know what we need? We need a podcast where we stage a fight where I'm like, I'm never coming on this podcast again, and you say, I never want you on this podcast again, and then we get on the same podcast again like the next week within like 7 days.
So, I mean, I used to be a radio program director. We did this all the time. Like back in my days of KFan and things like that, we like knew guys were going on vacation, so we'd stage a fight on Friday before they went on vacation, then they wouldn't be there Monday, and people would be, did it all the time. It's radio.
Build the anticipation.
All right, you are driving back from Vegas right now.
No, we're driving back from San Diego, actually.
Oh, wow, that's a long drive. Oh, I thought you were I thought you were in Vegas watching Donovan. You're driving all the way.
Yeah, I was in Vegas watching Donovan and covering Donovan, and then I flew to San Diego, and me and the wife and the kids, we went to SeaWorld, and we spent way too much money, and now we're driving back. So now I need to make this money back.
Okay, so I'll pay you the same I always pay you for this podcast. And
thank you very much. That's much appreciated.
But you're like, you know, you're at The Athletic. That's where they pay real money there. So, all right. before we dig into kind of this off season and the upcoming season and all those fun things, what was the vibe around Donovan at Team USA?
It was a tremendous vibe because, you know, talk to people close to the organization. The feeling is that it's obvious that he's a better player now than he was at the end of last year. I thought he played, you know, his stats won't show it, but I thought he played terrific in those 19 minutes at the scrimmage day on Friday. I thought his passing was terrific. I thought his reads were terrific. He was quick and explosive. He was active defensively, and you can tell that his body, he's worked on his body, and his body is a lot better than it was at the end of last year, and he's in tremendous shape. So the feeling is that he's a better player, and I think that right now, if you had to ask Greg Popovich, I think that he would readily tell you that Donovan's probably one of the most important guys on the roster right now.
Tony, I thought the whole idea that Donovan grabs that mic and is the one in Vegas addressing the crowd was a mammoth deal.
Yeah, I thought that was a big deal because I think it tells you what's thought of him internally. You know, right now, I mean, what I think is that, you know, not only is Donovan a lock to make the team, I think he's a good bet to be the starting shooting guard. But I also thought that Donovan grabbing the mic, it signifies that I think that he's being thought of as a leader, and I think that he's being thought of as one of the tone setters within the team, at least through the first week of camp. And I mean, obviously, you have a second week of camp in Los Angeles, followed by an exhibition in Anaheim on Friday. You know, so there's. You know, there's still layers to this, and there's still a ways to go in terms of stuff being played out. But you know, I thought that Donovan was absolutely one of the more impressive guys at least through the first week of camp.
You made the comment that he's better shaped than he was a year ago. He's a better player than he was when the season ended. I mean, the last 60 games of the year, this guy averages 25 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He shoots 43%, which isn't great, but he was 38% from three. Like, what do you think he can do if he's better?
Well, I think I mean, I don't know that he does it this year, but I mean, he's a guy that can, I think can approach 30 points a game in this league a night with 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and do it on efficient shooting. You know, he's, you know, you've been around him, I've been around him. We know what this, we know what his work ethic is. It's vociferous. You know, he's consistently working on his game, working on his craft. I think that this summer has done him a lot of good in terms of being healthy and being able to work on his craft. And I thought that, you know, you saw some of the differences in the scrimmage on Friday night. Like, he looked really explosive. He looked really decisive with his movements. He handled, you know, he only had 4 assists, but he should have probably had 8 or 9 assists. Because guys were missing easy shots, they were missing makeable shots for really good passes from him. And I think, and I tweeted this out, but I think that the big difference that I saw in him was his reads off pick and roll. They were terrific. And I think that if he continues on that path and he continues on that trend, he's going to be a guy that can do 5 rebounds, 5 assists, but make it look easy in doing so. Like, you know, don't want to put him on his level yet, but, you know, Kawhi Leonard, you know, when a game is over, it's like, okay, you barely realize he's there, and he's got 27 points, and he's got 8 rebounds, and he's got 4 or 5 assists. And I think Donovan wants to get to that point where he, you know, he can just go out there and just by breathing, get you 25, 5, and 5. And I think that's the goal that he should set for himself, because I think that's the talent that he possesses.
We have MVP candidates, and then we have kind of that next tier, which is probably Dame Lillard and Paul George and those guys who are kind of almost MVP candidates. We talk about them, but they're not really going to win the MVP. Do you think Donovan can get into that group?
Yeah, I absolutely think he can get into that group. He's got to become better defensively. And I think that that's a focus for him. You know, he's for him to get into that group, you know, and I know Damian Lillard's in that group, and I know James Harden's in that real top group. But the best way for him to get to you know, those really, really elite groups is to affect the game on both ends of the floor. For him to be impactful offensively, but at the same time fly around defensively and do that stuff as well. That takes being in great shape. That takes a mindset that, you know, not every player has. And I think it takes, you know, just being really dedicated to your craft on both ends of the floor. And I think I think the first step with Donovan is that he realizes that. He realizes that he has to be better defensively. He realizes that he has to work to stay in front of people as well as work to be
At that point, I just quit and said, TJ, let's not try this. You're driving to San Diego. There's no consistent service. Let's do it the next day. So we did the schedule show instead and have Tony coming for you for the next few days. So hopefully you understand that. Today's show is brought to you by Homie. We've talked about Homie an awful lot on the show. I've been telling you about, you know, you don't need to give up the 3%, the 6%. Well, you've seen all the funny billboards. They can also help you buy any home. Why would you choose Homie Agent versus hiring a traditional agent or a friend? Well, it's up to you. Customers who've done so rave about their service, but they also do so. Most agents can't or won't. Do they give up? They give you $5,000 back, up to $5,000 to help you with closing costs and fees. That's right. They'll refund you up to $5,000 back so you can buy more home with your money. It's just that simple. Find out more. Text LOCK at 88588. You'll be connected with a Homie agent to help find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and work to get your $5,000 back. Homie.com. Request a tour of any home for a sale with a click of a button, and your dedicated Homie agent will meet you there in person. Text LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. All right, we talked about Donovan. We'll get back onto that conversation, but the schedule is out. Did you have any thoughts on what you saw there schedule-wise?
I think the first 25 games are difficult. Of the first 24 games that I counted 13 teams that are going to be playoff locks. And then that's not counting you're facing the Oklahoma City Thunder twice, who could very well be a playoff team. You're facing the Sacramento Kings, who have designs on a playoff berth. And you're facing the New Orleans Pelicans in that stretch as well. So if you count all of those guys, that's 17 or 18, you know, first 24 games, 24, 25 games that are really difficult. And then the back end of December and the first 3 weeks of January are really manageable for the Jazz. And then you have a 7-game stretch where at the end of January and at the beginning of February, where I think it's, without looking, it's Houston, Denver, Portland twice. I think Denver those, again, San Antonio.
Those three teams all twice.
Yep.
With a single game of San Antonio sandwiched in there.
And the same, and to me, that's Utah's most difficult 7-game stretch of the season. And then you have a season-long 5-game home stretch to end February, and you have a really manageable March, and you have a pretty manageable April. Some things that stood out to me, the Jazz faced Golden State all 4 times before the All-Star break, which means they'll probably get Golden State all 4 times before Golden State gets Klay Thompson back. I think that first game against the Clippers may not have Paul George. And I think that's the second week of the season or the first couple of games of the season.
The first and the second game, they don't have Paul George.
Right. First and the second game, they might not have Paul George. So the Jazz do receive some breaks along the way with some of these, with some of these teams. But, you know, my question is this: with those first 25 games, how fresh are the best players going to be? Because you have Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell all playing World Cup. And how fresh are those legs going to be for what's going to be a real gauntlet in the first month and a half of that season?
Well, I talked to NBA trainers. They told me they think it's the best thing for them. But the biggest problem players have is they don't get enough run in the offseason. They do all their other stuff, but truly what you need them to do is actually just run. Like, they need to run. That's, you know, they have to be in shape, and that they're going to be in shape by being part of the World Cup. So that actually was a theory, that this was actually the best thing that could happen to them. Now you just have to kind of bring them back a little bit, right, and make sure that you don't wear them out too much.
Right, right. So, you know, you're gonna see a lot of load management in the preseason, especially with those three. I think Quinn's gonna rein their minutes in a lot, and I think that they might miss some games in the preseason altogether. I think it'll be interesting to see what the chemistry is, because to negotiate those first 20-25 games, you know, the Jazz are going to have to be playing well. And I can see a scenario where the Jazz are 10-11. I saw a scenario when I did the schedule. I do this every year. I go game by game and I try to project a win total. And I projected the Jazz to be 54-28 this season with this schedule. And I projected them to be 10-11 after the first 21 games of the season.
Wow. Wow. All right, so let's get to it. How does this team come together? Whose team is this going to be this year, Tony?
Well, I mean, it's Rudy's team, because Rudy's the best player, and he's your All-NBA player. He's the guy that the system is built around, especially defensively. But in terms of, you know, his veteran influence, he's been around. You know, it's his team. But it's also Donovan's team, and it's also Joe Ingles' team. You know, those are the three guys. Like, those are the three guys that have been here, and those are the three guys that have been through the wars together.
You know, so, you know, I think that those are the guys that everybody's going to take the lead from. And obviously Mike Conley, he's going to be a heavily respected voice in the locker room, and especially if he's as dynamic as the Jazz hope and think he's going to be. That kind of production always demands respect, and it always demands respect when he talks. So I think, you know, those first three, and then obviously Mike's gonna have influence, more and more influence as time goes on. But it's interesting because, you know, in the past it hasn't been anybody's team. You know, it's been kind of, you know, all of the veterans kind of police each other in the locker room. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. But I think that with guys going out and the guys like Ingles and guys like Rudy, as they gain more and more seniority, I think that, you know, their voices will have more and more influence as time goes on.
So I actually think this could be Mike Conley's team. And I think he's so respected. I think Ed Davis and Jeff Green are on the team because of him. Bojan's supposedly very, very quiet. And what jumps out to me on this is a little bit of what happened in Denver, where when Paul Millsap arrived, everyone just took a back seat to him. And it wasn't until Millsap got hurt a few times and missed games that Jokic reasserted himself, and that leadership got probably to where they want it, which is Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Nikola Jokic, because they respected Paul Millsap so much. Do you have any feeling that could happen here as well?
Well, I can definitely see it. I can definitely see a scenario where that happens. Look, you know, your point guard's always got to be your leader on the floor, right? Like, he's the guy that communicates to everybody, you know, and he's the guy that tells everybody where to be. He's the guy that gets everybody into their spots. So, I mean, you have that dynamic, and, you know, I think obviously, you know, you're correct in the dynamic where Conley is the guy off the floor, or Conley could be the guy off the floor because he's such a respected voice. And I think the point that you make is a good one. He's, you know, guys are on this team because of Mike Conley. Like, you know, Ed Davis and Jeff Green, they wanted to play with Mike Conley. You know, Bojan Bogdanovic, he wanted to play with Mike Conley. He said, once they got Mike Conley, I wanted to play there. So, you know, guys are on this team because of Mike, and that's going to garner a ton of natural respect. You know, and I think, obviously, Rudy and Joe and Donovan, they're going to garner a ton of natural respect as well. So I don't disagree with the notion that eventually this actually could be Mike Conley's team.
We talked about Donovan in the first segment today. What do you think Mike Conley does for Donovan Mitchell's game?
He gives him more spacing, and he gives him the opportunities, multiple opportunities, to get buckets easier. I think you're going to see a lot more Donovan Mitchell wide open spot up three pointers than you have ever in the past. I think you're going to see Donovan Mitchell scoring off of one or two dribbles instead of three or four dribbles. And I think that makes a big difference. I think you're going to see Donovan Mitchell scoring in transition where he doesn't have to take a single dribble. I think you're going to see him scoring off of cutting to the basket. I think Mike is going to put Donovan in easier positions to be productive offensively. And I think vice versa. I think Donovan is going to do the same thing for Michael Conley. I think that both of those guys welcome each other in the fact that they don't have to do it all themselves. You know, Mike was the only ball in hand off the dribble guy that Memphis has had for so long. And he's never played with somebody that can do the same things as he can. So, and vice versa. So I think that both of those guys are going to help each other. And I think that you're going to see Donovan scoring with less dribbles, with the use of less dribbles. And I think that that's going to be huge down the stretch in games. When you know, it really calls for Donovan to take over.
All right, you alluded to this. I think this is the number one question about this team. And so I'll ask this on day one. We'll get into other stuff in the as the week continues. The Jazz led the league in the best looks of any team in the league. Did they get great looks because their players were so poor that other teams left them open, or because Quinn Snyder's offense is so good that he got everyone big, wide open looks?
Well, I think we're going to find out. And I think that it was a little bit of both. I mean, you know, I think teams left Ricky Rubio open. I think teams left Royce O'Neal open. I think teams left Jay Crowder open to a certain extent. The biggest thing that Bojan Bogdanovic brings, that Joe Ingles brings, that Mike Conley brings, those guys bring gravity, and that's what this offense needs. So to me, if the Jazz don't lead the league in great looks, that might be a good thing, because that means the teams are guarding, and that means that the spacing is better, and that means there are more driving lanes to the basket, and that means that Rudy Gobert has more space to work with rolling down the middle in the pick and roll. That means Donovan has more space to work with when he does his thing off the dribble. So I think the biggest – the offense didn't need great looks. The offense needed spacing. And that's what the offense didn't get. That's what the offense didn't get against Houston. And that, to me, that completely neutralized Donovan Mitchell because of the fact that there was no spacing in the offense. So, yeah, you were getting great looks, but you're getting great looks from Ricky Rubio. So they need to get Donovan Mitchell great looks. They need to get Joe Ingles great looks. Those are the guys that need to get great looks. And I think that that's the barometer this year. Can those guys that were typically guarded really closely in the past, can those guys get good looks at the basket? And I think that that's your barometer of what the changes have been made this year, this summer.
He's Tony Jones of The Athletic. He's going to be with us tomorrow and the next day as well on Locked On Jazz. Day one in the book, summer interview series with the great Tony Jones here on Locked On Jazz, all part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Special thanks to TJ. Such a good dude. If you get a chance to send Tony a thank you on Twitter, he likes to reference his Twitter account, and he likes it if you do that. It's Tony T. Jones on the NBA. T. Jones on the NBA. Send him a thank you for joining the show. We super appreciate him. He'll be back with you tomorrow. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.